So it's a real treat to be here, and if it's okay, we're going to look at a passage. I just love the person of Jesus, and whenever I hear about him or read stories about what he was up to on earth, I always think, he's so cool. So we're going to look at a story of something that Jesus got up to when he was here on earth, and hopefully then weave it through into what it might mean for you and I as mums, whether we're mums of older ones, mums of little ones, mums of multiples or ones or whatever. Is that okay? So if you want to, you can read, but you don't have to. I'm going to read it to you. But we're going to look at when Jesus feeds the 5,000 in John. And we're going to start, it's John chapter 6. And we're going to start, Bible's behind. How cool. So we're going to start at verse 5. So John chapter 6, verse 5. And it's on page 1069. If you want some help to find it. Okay, let me read it. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here's a boy with 5 barley loaves and 2 full small fish. But how far will that go among so many?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed them to those who were seated, as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they'd all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. So here we have, I'm sure that's a familiar story to many of us, and if it's not familiar, it is now, because I better not put it on there, because that'll make the keys do funny things. This is probably quite a familiar story for those of us. If you're, kind of did church from a little person, I'm sure some of our little people have already heard this story. It's a very familiar story, feeding the 5,000. And what I love about Jesus in this story is he looks up, he sees the people, and it tells us he has compassion on them. Now, if I don't know about you, but if I was Jesus, and it's probably a good job I wasn't Jesus, but I think if I was Jesus, I think I would probably be a bit irritated, because here is quite clearly some very unprepared people in front of me. You know they're going to probably be spending quite a lot of time with me, and yet here they are in the middle of nowhere with no shops to go and buy things, without food. Philip says he's going to take more than 6 months' wages. Practical Philip. We haven't got enough money, Jesus. We can't solve the problem. And then we have Andrew saying, "Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish." But that's not going to go very far. So here we have a little person's packed lunch, 5 barley loaves, 2 fish, 5,000 people needing to be fed. So Jesus sits everyone down. He gives thanks and distributes the food. And this is then where community happens within the miracle. So as the bread and the fish comes to each of those groups, the miracle happens as community happens. Because if the first person got the food and just kind of held on to it, nobody else in the group would have it. So as they passed it, as they shared, the miracle of, I don't know how Jesus did it, but he did it, and of everyone getting fed. I read a book over the summer by Bob Goff called Love Does. I don't know if that's a book you've come across. If not, I would highly recommend it. And he says this: don't save up love like you're going to need it later. We're rivers, not reservoirs. And if people had held on to what they had, nobody would have been fed. I love the fact that the little boy brought his packed lunch. I just love that. And I bet he was one smug mummy. My boy had a lunch. And he's a seemingly insignificant person, isn't he? He's a small boy, is all we're told. We don't know his name. It's a seemingly insignificant amount of food. It was 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish. It wasn't even a posh packed lunch. It wasn't a meal deal. There definitely wasn't Ella Kitchen pouches in there. It was an ordinary, everyday person's packed lunch. Ordinary. And yet, in the hands of Jesus, it was more than enough that 5,000 men, plus women and children, were fed that day. It was more than enough in the hands of Jesus. Plus, I really like this about Jesus, he gets his disciples to tidy up. Did you notice that? They had to gather up the pieces. He didn't leave any mess. And there was more than enough left over. I wonder what would have happened if the little boy, as word went around that the disciples were looking for what food there was, if he'd kind of held tight to his packed lunch. I wouldn't mind betting that nobody that day would have been fed. If the little boy had kind of held on to what he had, I don't think everybody would have missed out that day. I don't know about you, but often I feel what I have to offer is very ordinary, very insignificant, very unspectacular and very un-Ella Kitchen-y. No disrespect to Ella Kitchen, I'm sure she's fab. And it's certainly not going to make a difference. It's just kind of an ordinary. I don't know whether you guys feel like that, but often I just feel like I'm an ordinary mum trying to do ordinary everyday life. And so often I hold back perhaps what God has given to me. I hold back because I think, well, what's that going to do anyway? I mean, it's just, there's no point. It's not going to make a difference anyway. And yet, what I'm beginning to realise is when we give what we have, when we put it into the hands of Jesus, it is always, always enough. Now, God has given to each one of us a unique set of gifts, of passions, of hopes and dreams. The musician, I mean, if I was given the violin, I can tell you it wouldn't have sounded as beautiful as it just did. I don't have that in my packed lunch. You spectacularly have violin playing in your packed lunch. Every single one of us has a unique gift set, a unique packed lunch, if you like. And I've got some little labels that simply says, "Hello, my name is Gail." In my packed lunch, there's a unique set of gifts. In your packed lunch, there is a unique set of gifts. And Psalm 1 through 9 tells us, doesn't it, how we were knitted together in our mother's wombs. Every single one of us has a unique knitting pattern. Totally unique, totally created just the way that God intended us for us to be. And what's contained within you and what's contained within I is of absolute value. And the truth is, when we place what we have into the hands of Jesus, it is always enough, with always stuff left over. 12 basketfuls of bread and fish. So often I feel like what I have is fairly ordinary, and then I don't know about you, I'm sure this probably only happens in Sunbury where I live, I can't imagine it happens in Peckham, but in my ordinary everyday life of being a mummy, in my ordinary everyday life of doing what I do, I kind of hit moments quite often in a day of a comparison crisis, and I've got my packed lunch. And then I catch sight of somebody else's packed lunch. And you see, the packed lunch of the other person is different to mine. And I have a little look at them and I think, oh my goodness, they are a superhero. I mean, they not only cook from scratch, they do that, they make courgette. They're at the gym. They're like superhuman. I mean, do you know what I mean? They're pretty amazing. And then I look at someone else's packed lunch and I'm like, oh my goodness, the Kath Kitson mummy. Okay, so it's World Book Day. So those of us who've endured celebrated World Book Day today, and we've had to find outfits, and you know, and then there is that mummy, isn't there, at the school gate, and it's all beautifully handmade, and you're thinking, I might only arrive by the skin of its teeth from eBay. And then I look at... please tell me you've got these mummies in your life as well. And then I look at another mummy and I think, my goodness, she has straight lines and she's so together and she's just so kind of trendy and she just kind of can do that. And then I look at, right, so Gail, I must just be a bit more organised. I must be a bit more organised. And then I think, okay, then we've got the Disney princess. And I think, okay, I need to be just kind of make a bit more of an effort by the way I look, and because she just looks so glamorous at the school gate. And then I look at the other ones, and do you know what I mean? Everybody is just so together. I just need to kind of be a bit more like them and a bit more like them. And if I can just kind of... And it all comes crashing down. I don't know about you, but often I fall into that comparison crisis. And somehow the, hello, my name is Gail, just feels, in comparison, pathetic and too ordinary and won't mount to anything. And the balance in my life goes, the peace goes, the joy goes, that sense of who I am gets lost. Albert Einstein, who I think we would all agree was a pretty intelligent person, said this: everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing it's stupid. I'm sure some of us have heard that before. And for me, there's times where I'm comparing myself, and you know what? I'm a fish. My name is Gail, I'm a fish, and then I'm looking at all these other mummies, or I'm looking at all these other women, and I'm judging myself against who I'm not meant to be. I'm meant to be a fish. You might meant to be a giraffe. Fantastic. Hallelujah for giraffe. Someone else might meant to be a beautiful flamingo. Just, we're all meant to be different. We're all uniquely different. Created, designed. But if I start comparing myself to other people, I very quickly feel inadequate. Now, we need to be aware that sometimes people are looking at us. So there's sometimes you guys might be looking at me tonight and thinking, wow, gosh, look at her. She's just kind of standing out there. I'd never stand up in front of other people. Wow. Not like you want to be like me or anything like that. I'm not that big at it. But do you know what I mean? You look at someone else and you think, gosh, they're a superhero. They're just amazing. Whereas actually, they're just being the Kath Kitson that they're meant to be. They're meant to be that way. That's the way they're created. I'm sure do you know what I mean? When people are doing what they're created to be, that's okay. I don't need to be threatened by that. I don't need to be thrown by that. I don't need to make myself feel inadequate. Because comparison diminishes who we are. It's diminishing. It's kind of saying to God, do you know what, God, the way you did your knitting pattern wasn't really good enough. So I'm going to kind of pimp it up a bit. I'm going to, make it a bit jazzier. I'm going to sew on a few accessories. Comparison diminishes who we are, but it also means we fail to celebrate who the other person is. And it absolutely, for me, being a mummy, it's that whole comparison thing just is massive. I was confessing to Vic on the phone earlier in the week that in putting this talk together, I came slightly obsessed on Friday with the person of Adele, the singer. I just kind of got a bit obsessed with Adele. And there was something about, I don't know how many of you saw the Brit Awards. and some of her acceptance speeches. If you didn't, don't worry about it. But there was one of, after about her third award, she was really emotional, and she'd probably had a few glasses of wine by then. But she said, "I've just been really lost. I got lost. I've just been a bit lost recently. And thank you for, you know, your love, and thank you for accepting me." And I think for me, becoming a mummy, I just kind of got a bit lost. That I lost that sense of who I was. Just kind of got caught up in other people, little people's needs. And yet, as I'm journeying through this, what I'm realizing is that on those days when it seems like, "Hello, my name is Gail," what I have to offer is very ordinary, pretty insignificant, is that when I place it into the hands of Jesus, who I am, when I place "Hello, my name is Gail" into the hands of Jesus, it is always enough, always. I love that when he was called upon, the little boy didn't disqualify himself. He didn't think, "Oh, it's a bit pathetic, it's not going to feed 5,000, I won't bother." I love that he wasn't selfish and kind of kept it to himself because he was a bit hungry and was worried if he gave it away, then he'd be hungry. But instead, what he did was he placed it into the hands of Jesus. So if that's true for us, if it's true for us that we're uniquely made and of intrinsic value, and that by comparing ourselves to other, we're setting ourselves up for a bit of a, it all going a bit horribly wrong, then the same is true for our children. And as well as falling into the comparison crisis of myself, again, I don't know about you, but I quickly fall into that with my children. And like I've said earlier, I know I joke about the fact that we are a mob, but we are a mob. And, you know, I look at some other friends' children, and they just seem to sit so pretty at the table, and they use cutlery, and they realise that, you know, the volume of an inside voice versus an outside voice, they just kind of can do that. And I then very quickly kind of look at my boys and go, just use your cutlery. And I'm kind of, because I'm feeling this comparison with the other people's little people, and very quickly I begin to try and add to my little person, well, they're big now, my big people's packed lunch, and, you know, if you could just be a bit more like X, or, you know, if you could just, then actually that would be a bit better. And yet, if we have a unique knitting pattern, the same is true for our children. Whereas they were knitted together in our wombs or in their biological mother's wombs, if we fostered or adopted, as we nurture our children, we have to be celebrating who they are, who they intrinsically are. You see, when we all bring who we simply are, and when we allow our kids to be who they simply are, we begin to build an authentic community. And I love the mosaic. I listened to Tan's talk online. It was amazing, about the fragments of life. And when we simply bring who we are, we begin to build an authentic community together, something beautiful. Because, you see, without you, the community is less than what it could be. People will be missing out on being fed if you don't bring who you are. Over half term, my eldest did a science thing, and on the last day, as parents, we got invited along, and so we sat there, and this guy stood up and started... He's a bubbleologist, and that's a genuine job. You can be a bubbleologist. So when you're next blowing bubbles with your little people, or you're doing a bubble bath, you're teaching your kids bubbleology, just so you know. And as this guy stood up, I was just kind of like, is he for real? Do you know what I mean? And he was so excited about bubbles and all the things that bubbles can do. I know. And how they're kind of developing, using bubbles to kind of get rid of tumours in bodies. I mean, it was amazing what he was talking about. And you see, the thing is in his packed lunch, he has a passion for bubbles. I definitely don't have a passion for bubbles in my packed lunch. But because he was being authentically him, he's doing something amazing. When you and I are authentically who we are, together as a community, we can incorporate people. And I think it's a place people want to be. If I turn up somewhere and I can just be me, that's really refreshing, because in so many other areas of my life, I can't just be me. And so as Molo, I think, as you get to know each other, as we all bring our packed lunches, as we all bring who God's uniquely created us to be, we create something really powerful and really special. And in the hands of Jesus, it is always more than the total of the sum parts, because that's what he does. A few years ago, I heard this illustration, and it's always stuck with me. I call it the snowflake effect. If one snowflake falls from the sky and hits the ground, it melts and disappears. But when hundreds of snowflakes, all unique, start falling to the ground and settle, it can stop cities. And when we as a community are authentically who we are, we can stop some cities. We can have an impact that is so much more than the total sum of parts when we're doing stuff together. In this place, by building community, we have the ability to have an impact. So let's be women who allow each other to simply be who we are. Let's be mummies who allow our kids to simply be who they are. Let's be women who don't compare or get jealous of what other people have in their packed lunch. But rather, let's celebrate who they are, rather than being threatened. So let's celebrate, you know, those friends who are just so good at organisation, and I'm so not. And, you know, you go ahead and send the doodle out. That's absolutely great, because I would never be sending a doodle. And if you don't know what a doodle is, that's okay, because a friend in your life will know what a doodle is. So, you know, let's celebrate that, rather than thinking, oh my goodness, I really ought to send a doodle out. We don't have to do doodles, it's okay. So let's be women who celebrate that difference, rather than kind of compare or threatened by it. And let's have the courage, because I think it takes courage. Let's have the courage to simply be who we are. To simply be, hello, my name is Gail. It's quite exposing, isn't it? It's quite that. This is just kind of who I am.